Welcome to our Bible study on 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 1 through 4, and verses 8 through 15a. As always, I am assuming you have read the passage, that you have your Bible open before you, and that you understand our translations may not agree. I also want to invite you to our in-person Bible study held on Wednesday evenings from 5:15 to 6 o'clock in the fellowship hall at the church. Our passage is the well-known story of Elijah and the still small voice, although a sound of fine silence, or a sound of sheer silence, or a sound of gentle stillness are more likely more accurate translations. In some ways, the opening of this story surprises us. In chapters 17 and 18, Elijah is a hero of faith, larger than life, faithful, confident, and authoritative. He is able to bring about miracles through prayer, raise the dead, and call down fire from heaven. He is able to confront a powerful king, challenge and kill 450 prophets of Baal, and outrun Ahab's chariot in a 17-mile race. But in our passage, he is on the run for his life. He appears to be easily intimidated, possibly suicidal, and seemingly depressed. At chapter 19, verses 1 through 3, Jezebel, who was Ahab's wife and a huge proponent of Baal, hears about Elijah's victory and threatens Elijah's life. In the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, she prefaces her threat by saying, "As sure as you are Elijah and I am Jezebel," which kind of adds to the personal vendetta Jezebel lays out when she says, "I will make your life as one of them," meaning the slain Baal prophets, "by this time tomorrow." It does seem strange that she tips him off. She's not exactly the wallflower type. Why not just send someone to kill him or arrest him? At any rate, Elijah takes the threat seriously and flees for his life. And by the way, at verse 3a, some translations have "saw" instead of "afraid," which are the same consonants but assumes different vowels. But "afraid" is the better translation. At chapter 19, verse 3b, we are told Elijah went to Beersheba, which is the southernmost town in Judah. There was a cliche that the people used to use, "from Dan to Beersheba," to talk about the boundaries of the kingdom. We can read about that in Judges chapter 20, verse 1, and 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 20, and in 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 11, and chapter 24, verse 2 and 15. Remember, at this time, the kingdom is split in two. Israel is comprised of 10 tribes to the north, and is where Elijah is from, and where Ahab is king. Judah is the southern kingdom, comprised of 2 tribes, where Joash is king. The point is, technically, Elijah is still in the promised land, but legally, well beyond the reach of Jezebel. Also at 19:3b, we are told Elijah left his servant there. The assumption is that this is the same servant from chapter 18, verse 43, a safe assumption. But for those of you interested in non-biblical, speculative, tradition trivia, some have suggested that this servant is none other than the son of the widow, possibly named Zarephath of Zarephath, that we read about in chapter 17, verses 8 through 24. And further speculation identifies this servant as the prophet Jonah, in 2 Kings 14:25, the son of Amittai, presumably the fifth minor prophet, whose book is named Jonah, and whose story is also well known. Others say, no, that boy would be too young. Whoever the servant is, Elijah leaves him behind. At 19:4, we see Elijah goes a day's journey into the wilderness, the desert, and sits down under a broom tree. Some translations say a broom bush. Others say a juniper tree. A broom tree can grow up to about 10 feet. It is not a great shade tree, but it is the best that is available, and out in the wilderness, it is better than nothing. Under the tree, we see that despite Elijah's successful ministries and miracles, the most recent at Mount Carmel, Elijah now appears to be at the end of his strength and the end of his courage, and says that he is no better than his ancestors, probably not just his relatives, but previous prophets and leaders. The burden is too much, and he wants to die. We pick up the story again at verse 8, after Elijah has been visited and provided food by an angel or messenger of God. And he goes on the strength of that food, traveling 40 days and 40 nights to Mount Horeb. Surprisingly, the location of Mount Horeb, usually referred to as Mount Sinai, and one of the most significant places in the Bible, is not known with any degree of certainty. Over the years, many sites have been proposed, and there are plenty of tourist sites you can visit, but the geography is not certain. What is certain is that wherever it is, this is the place where God has been known to show up, where Moses met God at a burning bush and later received the Ten Commandments. Elijah has never been here before, but as we will discover, Elijah will meet with God. At verses 9 through 10, we have God asking Elijah what Elijah is doing there, and we have Elijah's answer. Clearly, Elijah's answer is a complaint, a lament, that really does not have much resemblance to the facts. While it is true that Elijah has been very zealous, some translations say jealous, for the Lord, and the people of Israel have forsaken the covenant, the people of Israel have a long history of forsaking the covenant. The rest of the statements Elijah makes are not true. The people have not killed the prophets, although Jezebel may have. Look at chapter 18, verse 4 and verse 13. Elijah is hardly by himself. He appears to have forgotten that Obadiah took 100 prophets and saved them by 50s in caves and fed them bread and water. Again, chapter 18, verse 4 and verse 13. And there is no record of the people threatening Elijah, although clearly Jezebel has. At verses 11 through 15, we have God's response. God tells Elijah to stand upon the mount before the Lord. The signs of wind, earthquake, and fire are typical signs for theophanies, that is, appearances of God. This encounter is very similar to Moses' encounter with God in Exodus chapter 33, verse 19 through 23. And some have speculated that the cleft of the rock where Moses stood is the cave where Elijah now stands. Yet, as Elijah discovers, God is not in the familiar signs. Instead, at verse 12, Elijah hears God's voice. As already pointed out, the translation, a still, small voice, while poetic, does not really convey the oxymoron of the Hebrew, though it does express the idea that it is a gentle whisper or a hushed sound. The Hebrew word for silence is pronounced demema and is also used at Psalm 107, verse 29. Where it refers to the calm after the storm. At verse 13 and 14, after Elijah wraps his face in his mantle, God repeats the question, and Elijah repeats his answer. Despite the dramatic presentation It has apparently made no difference in Elijah's understanding. At verse 15a, God speaks to Elijah a third time and sends Elijah not to the wilderness of the south, but to the wilderness of the north in Damascus. In conclusion, this chapter is not very hopeful or comforting. Instead, it is blatantly honest about God's servants. Elijah, who has been blessed with much success, is ready to quit. He appears to be burnt out and depressed, worn out and fatigued. He sleeps a lot in this chapter. He complains. He needs to be told to eat. His view of reality is distorted. He is quick to blame others, and he feels all alone. And even though God speaks to Elijah three times, God never reprimands. But neither does God comfort. Instead, God commissions. God does not let Elijah quit. Instead, God reminds Elijah of the work to be done. Frankly, even though we like the idea of a still, small voice speaking to us, the truth is, sometimes we may not like what it says. This is the end of our study. Thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.